Tarim. Okay, Tarim.
Nobody watched this show but us, so it's Hello, and welcome to Snark Squad Pod, a media podcast full of friendship, feelings, and snark. My name is Marines.
I'm Nicole Sweeney.
And today, we're joined by Lainey.
Hi, I'm Lainey, and I have the YouTube channel Ginger Reads Lainey, where I talk about books and my writing.
You guys also have a wonderful live stream book club that... At the time that we are recording this, you guys are going to meet later today. That will be behind you, the listeners, when you get to this.
But we do it once a month, so.
Join House Salt Book Club next time. But Lainey is here not to talk about anything bookish, but to talk to us about Motherland, Fort Salem, which asks the question on every AP US history student's mind, what if the witches being killed during the Salem witch trials had actual powers and used those powers to make a deal with the government to stop burning witches at the stake in exchange for starting a witch army? Yes. Set in the present day, but with the assumption that this like witch army thing has been conscripting young women when they turn 18 for centuries now, Motherland follows the conscription and formation of an enemies to friends unit consisting of Rael Collar, Abigail Bellwether, and Tally Craven. The military units are assigned, but you can think of them as like bonded covens, and their drill sergeant is Anacostia Quartermain. There's also a like witch terrorist organization that wants to free witches from military service and like maybe kill all of the non-witches. I'm not entirely clear on what they want. They do a lot of like big showy murder, and they also have a thing with balloons as their like signature, which is visually interesting, if nothing else. We meet kind of at the like flashback to the Salem witch trials, a woman named Sarah Adler, who is still the present day general. She's like the original witch who made the deal with the government to form the witch army, and she has been leading that witch army ever since. She's hundreds of years old, and she's constantly surrounded by a bunch of old women who were actually young women, but they magically give Sarah their life force to keep her alive, and also make a weird clicking noise. That's not important. It's just that just like, these characters. So Rael is the one we meet first. She is a healer who uses what I think are like old school Appalachian witch methods to heal. I think that's where she's from, because there's this whole like orthodoxy versus like cultural approaches thing running throughout. There's like what they're taught at witch basic training, but then there's like undercurrents of other witch cultures having other spells and stuff. Rael's mom recently died in war right before the start of the show, so she's a little raw from that grief. She quickly meets and falls for fellow witch recruit Scylla, who we, the audience, learn also almost equally as quickly is working for the terrorist organization, the Spree, trying to recruit Rael. Abigail Bellwether is part of the witch elite. Her mom is a super high-ranking witch, and she comes from a super important family. At some point during the season, we meet some of the Bellwether family at Abigail's cousin's wedding, though her cousin dies during a terrorist attack at the wedding. Rounding out the trio is Tally Craven, who starts the show with her mother begging her not to go into the witch army. Her and her mother are the last remaining witches of their family line because Tally's aunts all died in battle, and Tally's mom got a special dispensation to get out of the military in order to like protect their line. Tally was included in that special dispensation, but because of the Spree's recent attacks, she decides to answer the call anyway out of a sense of patriotism and duty. Over the course of this first season, we watch the three girls become close with one another as they go through basic training and like try to get on into war college rather than being sent to the front where they will almost certainly die. In the background, there are all these like Spree attacks, and the basic training recruits are called up to fight before they finish basic, like ordered by General Adler to do this. And like during that battle, Tally realizes that there are civilians on one of the trucks that they're being ordered to blow up. But Anacostia is like getting word from General Adler somehow. I don't know. They're communicating through magic that, like, they have to do the attack anyway, and don't worry about it. There's definitely not civilians on there. And then later they watch General Adler lie on TV that the Spree killed some civilians during the attacks. Shortly thereafter, Abigail's mother tries to, I don't know if it's a coup per se, but she, like, goes behind Sarah's back to the president to try to get General Adler removed so that she can become the general. And then General Adler puppets the president, which is basically, like, she uses her witch powers to, like, speak for the president during an address. Anna Costia sees this. The girls also know about this. This is, like, a super taboo and forbidden thing. In the final episode of the season, there's this big mission after the girls all graduate from basic and learn that in spite of being, like, the best in their class, they're not going on to war college, presumably because General Adler is mad at them for being part of the Bellwether mini coup, whatever the fuck that was. Going back to the whole, like, there are cultural things, and then there's, like, the orthodoxy. There is this mysterious tribe of witches known as the Tarim. Their magic is super powerful, but it's also, they're very secretive about it, and they don't want governments to have it because they are concerned about what governments will do with their tremendous power. One of the, like, young witches from that tribe gets super sick, and her older brother, in spite of, you know, not trusting the government witches or whatever, wants to save his sister's life. So he brings his sister to Fort Salem and they try to heal her. None of the, like, witch healers at Fort Salem are able to do anything about it, but eventually they manage to connect Rael to the sister, like, out in the woods, and Rael does her, like, non-orthodox magic. I don't know how else to describe it. The show is not super clear about it either. And, like, manages to heal the little girl. In the final episode of the season, the little girl and her brother agree to leave the Fort Salem witches to their tribe in order to rescue who is left of their tribe, but only if Rael and her unit are part of the mission, because other witches there are sick with the same thing that the little girl was sick with. They eventually get caught up in a battle with another sort of large terroristy element that has actually been responsible for a lot of the killings that were attributed to the Spree. This other element is, like, a presumed long gone enemy of witches that wants to destroy all witches. A battle ensues. General Adler is hurt, and Tally steps up to replace one of the fallen, like, little old women that are giving their life force to her. They eventually all, like, flee the scene, but as they are fleeing, Rael is trying to help the last of the, like, children and people from this tribe onto the helicopter, and she gets attacked. Abigail stays behind with her, but everybody else gets on the helicopter and flies away, thinking that Rael and Abigail are dead, but we see them alive in some sort of, like, magical way. And that's the end.
I wonder if people are, like, listening so far and wondering why this show, like, why we watch this show.
Yes.
But I have a feeling that answering the question, did you like this, will kind of point everybody in that direction. Mm. So we'll start there where we always start. Did you guys like this show?
I did. I loved it. Took me a couple episodes to fully get into it, but when I was into it, I was super into it.
I was surprised by how much I enjoyed this show. I started watching it just as a, I don't know, like, I wanted to have something to turn my brain off to because of the world. And Hulu was like, I think you want to watch this freeform show. And I was like, you know what, Hulu? You're right. I do want to watch this freeform show. And then I, like, binged it and got to the end of 7 episodes and was like, that's a weird ending, before I realized that, like, it wasn't actually done yet. And I was pretty mad. So I clearly liked this show if I was furious when I realized that I had to wait 3 weeks to finish watching it.
So somewhere in that, Nicole and I were talking and she was like, mentioning things. I think it was like, what have we watched that we could cover on the podcast? And you kind of threw it out there, but almost immediately was like, you know, I'm just watching this, like, letting it wash over me. I think your exact words were, my last 2 brain cells, like, this is what they can watch.
yeah, I threw it out there there specifically with the caveat that, like, we shouldn't talk about this on the podcast, but right. if we're talking about what we're watching, it's this.
And I kind of let it go. That was a few weeks ago. I was just like, okay, I don't know what the show is about. But recently, my last two brain cells were like, hey, girl, you want to watch some TV? And I was like, yeah, how about that one thing our friend said she could watch? And I just looked it up on Hulu. And several episodes in, I started, like, sending reactions to Nicole. And she was like, do you just want to talk about it on the podcast? And I was like, okay. And then it was, okay, who can I ask? Who will I know for sure will watch this and talk to us about it? Like, it's kind of, you know, exactly what you would expect a freeform mm-hmm. show to be. And it's got that kind of, like, drama-y kind of thing. And I was like, I know. Lainey will watch it. So that's why we're all here today. But yes, I enjoyed it a lot more than I expected to. It was perfect for binging. At first, when I started watching, I was watching it in this way of, like, I'm interested in what happens, but I don't really care about the characters. Like, any one of them could die and it'd be fine. And then at the end, I was like, do not touch my precious baby, you damn show. Like, I'm so upset. So the characters definitely grew on me. And in general, I have not been in a good place for consuming media, but this was suspiciously easy to consume during these hard times. So yeah, I enjoyed it. And I guess now we can, like, kind of get into talking about the details of that. And I think the best place to start is sort of with, like, the main three characters in our trio. We'll start with Rael Collar. What did you guys think about her character and what she brought to the show?
She's my least favorite of the trio. She was the one who it took me the longest to really warm to, and, like, was part of what I think kept me at arm's length from the show. And, like, I don't know how to explain it exactly, but we were introduced to her first. And so while it's, like, all three of them are sort of main characters, I felt a little bit like she was being introduced as, like, the main one of the main characters. And I don't know what it is, but there was something about her that I had a really hard time connecting with, and I wanted to like her more than I did. But I feel like some of that is maybe a consequence of her being put in a plot where we know more than her. And, like, that it just like made it kind of annoying to watch. Like, it was hard to get invested in any of the things that she was invested in when I had more context for her choices than she did in that way. So I don't know. I'm curious to see if I will like her more in a future season. If this show gets future seasons. I have no idea. I didn't even look that up.
There is going to be a second season.
Oh, great.
Because after the season finale, I was like, okay. Click, 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 click. I was so upset. But I feel the same way about Rael as you did, Nicole. And I do think that she was presented as the main character. And even in all, like, the promo shots, she's the one in the middle, mm-hmm. the one in the front.
I love that screaming promo shot. It's like, same. It does not convey any meaningful information to, like, a viewer who knows nothing about the show. It's a very weird choice. But once I, like, had seen the show, I didn't explain this in my plot synopsis. Their voices are essential to their magic. So, like, the screaming thing is cool. Mm-hmm. Now that I've seen the show, I like the picture. I don't know how useful it is as a promo image. Yeah. But
I mean, when you first were like, I'm watching Fort Salem or whatever, and I looked it up, I was like, oh no. And I immediately dismissed it.
yeah. I also feel like because she was kind of almost the foil of the unit for at least the beginning part, I was just so annoyed by that because I'm like, they said in the beginning that you fail as a unit. If mm-hmm. one person goes down, you all fail. So the fact that she was, like, really dismissive about it while there was, like, Abigail and Tally who were, like, invested to at least succeed just made me think that, like, she was kind of being a baby about it. And I'm like, get with it. Like, there's other people's lives at stake mm-hmm. than just yours. Mm-hmm. But I did love her by the end. Like, I loved all of them by the end.
I'm going to jump ahead and say that a lot of what you guys are saying is how I felt about Abigail. Like, she was my least favorite of the characters. And a lot of, like, the way that they were trying to ingratiate her with me, I was like, you are not succeeding. But I really enjoyed Rael. play out from the beginning, even though we know she's like making bad decisions because we know what's going on. I was pretty invested in her point of view or her side of the story. And I thought it was interesting that the story does like center her as kind of the main character, because she's approaching this from a place of like having recently lost her mom, a place of grief. And she's the one that goes in there guns a-blazing to shuck authority. I think that had you like framed it a little bit more Tally's story, who was a little more gung-ho about the army and the unit or whatever, you don't get that journey, I guess, of like learning to be a unit, or the enemies to friends sort of thing, or the coming of age. Like, you needed her not believing in these things to really bring the story around. The only thing that really bothered me about her was her hair. And it wasn't the braided side. It was like the wet dog side, like the scrunched side.
It was weirdly like stringy. Like, they were not doing her any favors in the hair and makeup department. Maybe I just secretly hated her for that reason, because I hated her hair.
It was like PTSD to middle school, when all of the straight haired girls in middle school were putting mousse in their hair for some reason. Like, you have no texture. What are you doing? That's exactly what her hair was. But only on one side. Those are my deep thoughts on Raelle.
I also really hated her hair. I agree, though, that I think that she was the correct choice, like, of the three of them to use as our, like, initial entry point. Obviously, like, the elite one, yes, makes sense to me. That is not the choice that you want, not the way you want to go with it. And I agree, too, that, like, Tally would have been like a complicating choice for that reason. And really, if Tally had been our entry point, it would have made Raelle look worse for all of the reasons that, you know, you were describing, in terms of like, it's other people's lives are on the line. And like, if we're not being given right at the top reasons to be suspicious, then that ends up looking worse. And so like, you really have to start with her in order to give some context for all of that. I think part of the problem is that I still don't really know what they're trying to say about this like organization. And like, that's like part of why I get hung up on that. Like, I agree that that's like the correct choice sort of broadly. I'm with that. But like, I'm not clear on what the show wants me to think about General Adler. And I don't think the show knows what it wants me to think about General Adler either. And like, and so it's that element of it that, I don't know, like, it works for Tally to have all of these sort of complicated feelings. But if I felt like the show was giving Tally these feelings towards some larger purpose, it might be better. But like, I don't really know where it's going. I don't think the show understands where it's going either.
Absolutely not. We're going to get to that, I promise. We're going to get to kind of like the premise of world building, because it, honestly, it was astounded by just the premise. I don't know. We'll get there. We kind of mentioned them already a little bit, but just to kind of round it out, how did you guys feel about Tally, who, she comes into this and she's more bright-eyed, bushy-tailed. She doesn't have to be here, but she elected to be here because she believes in the cause that we don't understand as the viewer, but she certainly does. So how did you feel about Tally?
She was my favorite.
Mine
of the
too.
Trio.
Yeah, she's the best one.
Yeah, and like, I don't even know what it was. I think it's when I realized that she is also a Libra that I related to her.
Wait, is this confirmed by the show? Is this just your...
Oh, no, this is my own opinion.
Okay.
She is 100% the leader. She's the mediator of the trio. She's the one that placates both of them. She kind of has different relationships, good relationships with both of them, when Abigail and Raelle's kind of is obviously tenuous throughout the show. But she's so chaotic with all her feelings, and I loved her, and like her whole like first relationship with Garrett, I was like, this isn't going to end well, but you keep doing it, girl. I support your decisions.
I have nothing to add to that, except that she was also my favorite. She was the best one. There's an earnestness to this character. Her driving motivator is not the kind of thing that would endear me to her in general, but like, she is just so sweet and open-hearted
and innocent, like, and
innocent and naive. And that's the thing, like, that like, even that sense of like the fact that she is driven to disregard the dispensation because of this sense of like patriotism and loyalty and whatever is is like what I mean when I say that's the kind of thing that I'm like, oh, I don't like that. But then like you see the place that comes from and just how like sincere that is for her. And also like watch her come to terms with, I don't know, the complications surrounding that.
Honestly, the last 5 minutes of the season finale when she decided to become one of the Biddies, I was like so gut-wrenchingly heartbroken. And I don't even remember most of the rest of the 5 minutes. Like, I was watching it, but I was still being like, Tally's old now. What am I going to do next season? I'm so sad.
Yes, yes. Big agree. They have to find a way to undo this because she's the best one.
Correct.
I'll quit.
She has to be young again.
I think I didn't realize that Tally was my favorite until that moment, because when I saw her getting old, I was like, oh, like the emotions that moment like brought out were the strongest I had experienced. And that's when I was like, oh, I see. Like she slowly became my favorite. Uh-huh. And I think that the main thing for me was what Nicole already said, was like the earnestness. At first I was like, well, maybe she's the most relatable, but she grew up on like an all-female compound. Uh-huh. Like, yeah. I don't know about relatable, but she was just really earnest. Like it was easy to understand her and her mm-hmm. motivations and where she was coming from. And also always easy to cheer for that Libra peacemaker, yep. I guess. That leaves us with the last member of the trio, who is Abigail Bellwether. And she's like the elite one. She comes from like the super fancy schmancy family. She has, I guess, like the most, I don't know. She's the one like, we need to succeed, because she's getting a lot of pressure from her family and all that, living up to a legacy. So I already spoiled my feelings on her. She was my least favorite, and I think a lot of it just came from like a lot what we're saying about the other characters, just her role in the plot was my least favorite, and all of her like condescending looking down on the others bullshit was just like not as fun to watch. But how did you guys feel?
Well, she was my second favorite.
There's only three, so
yeah. I don't know, I felt like there's like no way I can relate to her story whatsoever, but for some reason I was like really invested in her family dynamics, and this whole high Atlantic society was really interesting to me, even though we only got a brief look at it during the wedding episode. I mean, her struggle was also kind of playing with a team to the mm-hmm. point where when she was offered War College at the end, she chose to stay with her unit, which I could see coming, that she would get like an ultimatum like
right,
that, but like
right.
pleased that she chose correctly.
She has the clearest and most defined arc of the three of them. Like mm-hmm. the other two don't change or grow that much. I mean, like they do a little bit, but they're still like essentially the same characters. It's just that they like have acquired new pieces of information. Rael in particular, like I don't really feel that she changed at all over the course mm-hmm. of the season. Tally a little bit in like the impact of the information is meaningful, whereas Abigail like goes on more of a proper journey. Like she's, you know, stuck up and snooty and whatever, and like not a team player at the beginning, and she learns to be all of those things. You know, she comes around and makes friends with her lifelong enemy just before she dies, which is unfortunate, but like yep. I don't know, we watch her actually grow from this experience, which I think is part of why really she's my second favorite, because there's only three, and like Tally was my favorite, and I don't know why. She's in the middle.
Yeah, well, I think it also helped when they introduced Adil, the mm-hmm. Tarim boy, especially the part when he, which I guess we also should talk about, are boys witches too? Because I guess he is, but then there really wasn't any other ones, and I have right. questions about witch father and everything like that, but we'll get uh-huh. into that later. But uh-huh. so anyway, so Adil, he can sing or whatever, use the seeds, and he can turn invisible, and she thought that was cool for like military stuff, and he's like, you're still the same like military princess. And then she kind of realizes her mistakes in that, but yeah, I still kind of liked her arc, and I did like her with Adil.
I think the first time, maybe the first or second time I sent a message to Nicole while watching was like one of the early episodes where it was suddenly like a dance orgy
yes.
that we were at, and I yes. was like, what? This just like went ham on like, you know, that whole trope of like every, I don't know, CW show having like a dance mm-hmm. episode. This went ham.
Yeah. What if the dance episode was an orgy?
Correct.
I mean, I won't lie, this was the episode that changed my opinion on the show, where I'm like, okay, I'm invested now.
the show really commits. It commits.
Yeah. It does.
The most world building I got from the show was from the opening credits when they showed that map of the United States.
The very Game of Thrones inspired.
I kept pausing it every other episode because I'm like, okay, what's going on here? And why haven't they explained what the session is? Because that's where Iowa is. So I'm in the session. And what does that even mean? Did they explain that at all? What was that?
No.
Lainey, if you've come here for answers, you've come to the wrong place.
Everything that the show did in terms of world building was super interesting. Where the heck did this idea come from? But also, it just kind of left just enough to make sure the story was intact, but not much more.
I mean, I really like early American history like that, and to kind of see how it altered through the 200 something years was really cool. And that's what I kind of liked about what happens when the witches, if they became the United States Army. That's an original idea, and I liked that.
Yeah, the essential premise of this world is super interesting. It just feels like they didn't get past that. They had this original idea that was really, really cool, and then after that, it felt like they were drawing plot points and ideas out of a hat. Drawing their world building elements at random. I agree though that the essential premise is so fucking weird as to at least be interesting and a worthwhile conceit.
I just also the magic system of it. I didn't really understand, but I like the idea of the voices and the different sounds that they were making and how all of that carried different magic and the way that they could use their magic together. And then, part of the reason that they have the orgy episode is that it feeds their magic or whatnot. So all of those things, again, really interesting, little tidbits that the show just kind of gives you and then is okay, bye. Doesn't carry any further. So I don't know if we're going to get more in season two of what this all means. I'm not very confident that we are. All of the stuff that was kind of around the war images when they go into that one portion that's kind of a museum and they start looking at their matrilineal lines kind of going down and seeing all the deceased and what all of that stuff, all of that imagery was really, 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 really freaking cool. And I just wish we got more of it.
And then speaking to the magic, can guys be witches? What's going on there? What is a witch father? What does that mean? Did they explain that? Was I just not paying attention?
Maybe they explained it and you just weren't paying attention. But if that's the case, I also was not paying attention because I have no recollection of them explaining this. My loose understanding is that there's men in witch culture who are basically witch concubines and the witch father is
the main one.
Yeah. I don't know. It was weird. I got big men can't be witches vibes.
Same.
Up until the Tarim guy shows up.
And yeah.
That was confusing.
Because at least the ones that they shipped in for the girls to have sex with, basically, they make the weapons or that little whip thing that they use in the show. So are they there just for sex, a 5-year marriage contract, and making their cool weapons? Because that's what I got from the show.
That's what I wanted to be happening. Boys can't fight. Yeah. Boys need to stay home.
Well, there's even during that episode when they're in that museum, Tally and Garrett, when they're talking and I forget the exact wording, but he's like, well, yeah, men aren't as good as women. And I'm like,
I think that's what the show wanted to happen.
Yeah.
I think what will eventually be revealed is, well, I don't know how the Tarim, never mind. I don't know how the Tarim fit into this at all. Because at the end, when they're facing their other enemy, it's the long gone witch killers or whatever, it appeared to me that they were also men, but it seemed also they were perverting whatever the witches were doing. They had some sort of weird shift of the magic. So it wouldn't surprise me if it were men can't be witches, but these men have found a way to
I thought that what they were doing was that they had taken the voice boxes of women of the witches that they had killed. I didn't mention this in the plot synopsis, but there's a bit where a bunch of people who were part of the Bellwether line, but didn't know they were part of that. Nobody knew that they were witches except the Fort Salem people figured out that these supposed civilians who were killed were actually witches. And then they like covered it up so that they could frame it as a spree thing. The show tells us that all of the killing of witches that happens was actually done by this other enemy or whatever. When we saw all of those dead witches in the morgue or whatever, their throats had all been like cut out. Then when we get to that final battle, if I am remembering correctly, they all had stuff they had these like weird chokers on with like a big, yeah. There was like a big contraption. And so my understanding was that there was some connection between those two facts. They wanted the voices of these witches that they had killed, and like that was somehow the point.
So like men can't do magic except for that one hot guy.
Yeah, correct. Because he's with his hotness, he gets to do magic.
He was a soft hot.
Well, that's the thing. You have to be soft hot. That's correct. You can't be like...
You can't be manly hot.
Yeah, manly hot and do magic. That's obviously, Lainey. Don't be ridiculous.
Okay, maybe this is a good place to talk about. We've been talking about like world building, but Sarah Alder is like the one who established this whole like unit of the army. And we've said this already that I don't understand what the show was trying to say. I don't really know what it wanted me to feel about Sarah, especially because like she's warned about these Camarilla or whatnot, and she's like, no big deal. And then at the end, she's like, it's them, it's the Camarilla. And I'm like, lady, we knew this like 3 episodes ago, but you weren't listening. And maybe the show is trying to say things about like war bad, and like, I don't know, morally gray things on both sides sort of thing, which is what Sarah represents.
I was indifferent about her, and then I didn't like her when they had to kill the hostages in that truck or whatever. But then towards the end, I found myself liking her. Like when she took over the president's voice, I love a good bad bitch move. And that was a bad bitch move. So I'm like, okay, I kind of like you now. And then by the end, I understood kind of maybe when she was talking to the unit about like, you have to make the hard decisions. I'm like, yeah, she's kind of right.
She falls into the larger category of things where I feel like there just wasn't enough thought there in the execution. Like, I don't mind the idea that like they are led by this sort of like complicated, morally gray leader. I think like that's fine. There's definitely some stuff that is like interesting and worth unpacking there. My like personal biases, right, are like military industrial complex bad, but like also you can flip that and say, well, you know, what if we had this whole like matriarchal thing, and like, guess what? Women can suck too. Like, I don't know. Like there's stuff to explore there, but I don't think that the show comes up with compelling enough answers to things like, I forget which one of the girls points out to her that like, yeah, you're making these tough decisions, but you're never the one at risk. You are never at risk when you're making these quote unquote tough decisions. I feel like the show doesn't have the space to explore things with a ton of depth. And I don't care, like that's fine, but this is a character that it feels like they either need to like commit, either she's like altruistic and righteous or she's like nefarious, because like they don't have the space to actually answer any of the interesting questions about her complicated history.
Well, like then I was thinking, like, you're over 200 years old, so you've been in the game for over 200 years, and suddenly someone wants to like take that power away from you. So like I understood why she did what she did to secure her power.
I agree. I both understood what they were trying to get out without being like, this is a hard position to be in, but it didn't really answer the questions. There were so many like pieces of this like entire war machine that they just, again, they used to like fill in details, but that I just wanted to hear more about, like, if you don't graduate war college, they basically send you to the front lines to die. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. any like other details about trying to convince me that this like particular war machine was doing the right thing, like I don't feel like they did enough of that necessarily. And even when showing us like the spree, the terrorist organization of witches was doing certain things, like, but they were doing it because the military existed in the first place. So there was a lot of that like back and forth and a lot of questions that this show wasn't there necessarily to answer, mm-hmm. but it was a background that was propping up the story that they did want to tell. So, like, we can't help but look in that direction and be like, excuse me, I have some questions about these details that you're using to prop up this other story. Uh-huh, and I think uh-huh. that that's kind of what Sarah's character ended up feeling like for me. I understood her role, but there were some details there that they didn't quite answer that were distracting. One of the other main characters and also main love interest of the show was Scylla, and she was like the spree undercover that infiltrated the base. How did you guys feel about Scylla?
I didn't really have any strong feelings either way to her, but I think a lot of that goes into the fact that I think a lot of the relationships, especially the romantic ones, felt really rushed, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
Yes.
So it was like really hard for me to like get fully behind Raelle and Scylla, which sucks because like that whole trope, all their scenes were all things that I'm like, yeah, this is my shit. But then just like the way it came together, I don't know. I think it's just, it was rushed. And I think that with like almost all the relationships, not too much with Telly and Garrett, because as a Libra, we do fall in love with someone every week. So I, so I forgave her very all in for Garrett relationship. But even like with Abigail and Adele towards the end, I'm like, y'all been together for 4 episodes, like calm down. And I felt the same way, especially because I felt like Scylla and Raelle's relationship was the central romantic relationship of the show.
Yes.
I wish it would have been just more developed and had more room to breathe, because such big things kept happening every episode where I'm like, how do they love each other? It's like episode 3. Mm-hmm. And and like, it just was like one thing after another where I'm like, it's hitting all the correct things that I want in a relationship, but that's all happening too quick.
I feel like every question that you have asked so far, I have answered with like complaints. And yet I, at the top, said I liked this show. I don't know how to explain myself. I contain multitudes, but I agree with everything Lainey just said. And that like, it was way too rushed. I think that this is true of all of the romantic relationships, but it was the most egregious with Raelle and Scylla because they were the central romantic relationship of the show. They were given the most to do without being given more time. If that makes any sense. Every time we see Raelle like, no, I love her, it's like, you have been dating for like 8 seconds. Like, calm down.
You've been in basic training for a week, honey.
Right? Like, I just, you don't know her. You do know that your fate, like your entire fate is tied to these two other girls who are in your unit. So like that should maybe matter to you a little, and not the girl that you've been hooking up with for a week, two tops.
And I don't even like, I don't protest insta-love. I don't. I just, what I protest is like when they want me to believe that the insta-love is like deep enough to carry like a terrorist organization and threatening your loved ones and your friends. And all like, no, our love was instant. It's not that deep though. Oh, I'm sorry. You belong to the terrorists. Goodbye, girl. Like that's how that should have played out. But they wanted us to believe that it was like deep enough to like really survive kind of the seriousness of what these two people were facing, where I just didn't buy that. And I think that to me, it was almost instantly, and this goes back to what you guys kind of said about Raelle, but it was almost instantly apparent to me that Scylla was bad. Like, she showed up and I was like, that bitch is bad. So had they carried on a little bit more with like the, like fooling the audience, and then it was like a reveal to us, like, oh my God, she was the enemy all along. I feel like we would have been invested in a different way, but something about her acting, the direction, or just kind of the way that they told the story, there was never any way for you to look at her and be like, aw, innocent, pure.
Yeah, and I never understood, why did Anacostia hate her so much in the beginning? She's like, you need to stay away from Raelle. Why? What kind of history is going on between the two of you that you know something that we don't?
She watched the same scenes as us. She was like, that bitch is bad.
She's getting a zoomy edit. Like, this is clearly... Yes, I totally agree that I think that my problems with Scylla are wrapped up in my problems with Raelle. Like, that 100%, it like is what I meant when I said us knowing things that she didn't made it harder for me to get invested in her and her story. Her story was this romantic relationship more than the stuff with her mom, which I think think is more interesting. Like, I would have liked that to have been more the focus of her story, but her story was so tied up in this relationship that, like, we couldn't get invested in because we knew that Scylla was bad. I think that I would have liked that whole thing more if two things. One, they had done as you just said and, like, not tipped their hand that early with Scylla, if they had let that take more time and let us learn when Rael did, or when Tali did at the very least, let that be our moment for learning that Scylla was on the other side. And then two, like, acknowledged the non-existent time that they had been together up to that moment and, like, let that turn stick and, like, you know, one, have Rael be appropriately upset that, like, okay, you are like, we're trying to recruit me for your terrorist organization, like, maybe I'm done now. And also, like, let Scylla being a true believer be the thing more than having Scylla turn her back on this lifelong commitment to the Spree's cause. And we are given really good and compelling reason for why Scylla is with the Spree. For anybody listening to this podcast episode who did not watch the show, Scylla's backstory is that her parents were draft dodgers and she spent her entire life kind of like on the run with her family. And then eventually, shortly before Scylla's turn, Scylla got drafted, the military caught up with her parents and killed them. And right around that same time, Scylla joined the Spree because she was like, fuck the military. And I get all of that. Like, all of that makes sense. And especially since it's not, I don't know, the show is still not super clear on whether or not we should think the military is good or bad. That's all fine. But, like, the fact that Scylla would turn her back on that because of this, like, 3-week relationship is insane. Is insane. The fact that she was like, no, you're right, I will just dance with you and not hand you over to the Spree. In addition to, like, Rael's side of it being frustrating, the Scylla side of it was also really, really frustrating. I liked the actress, though. I think she did, like, a good job. She just wasn't asked to do compelling things. Like, I don't know. I don't blame the actress for this. I blame the writing.
I mean, it's to her credit that I saw her face and I was like, ooh, you bad.
Yeah.
Whatever she was doing, like, she did it right because she was bad. She convinced me. I didn't feel like at the right point, like the story beat was not at the correct place. But yes, I mean, she was also very pretty. So you understand the appeal there, the allure, and she was very mysterious or whatnot.
You got to have your Insta love interest be hot. Like, that's a bare minimum. Come on. Bare minimum requirement here.
No uglies allowed.
I'm sorry. The whole thing about being instantly in love is physical attraction.
Yes.
So I'm just saying that piece was there.
Yeah. I agree. I think Tali is the prettiest, but Scylla is the second prettiest of the witches on this show. So as the resident queer, I'm here to say.
Duly noted. Wait, now I have a question, though. Since you already decided that Tali is a Libra, have you also given signs to the other characters?
Of course.
Okay. The people need to know.
I only did of the trio. So okay. When I figured out, I'm like, okay, Tali, our girl, is definitely a Libra. Then I was like, so the other two, they're opposites. So Abigail is definitely an earth sign and Rael is definitely a fire sign. So then for a while, I thought that Abigail is a Virgo, but I decided that no, she's definitely a Taurus. And then for Rael, she's definitely not a Leo. So she's definitely a Sagittarius.
For anybody else who enjoyed that, I thought you were going to go with Virgo for Abigail. That's what I am. And that's what I know the most about. But it makes sense that that didn't end up being the one. And I am just so thrilled, so thrilled that you took the time to do this.
There were scenes where I was like, I'm not paying it that much attention because I was like really trying to figure out like which sign they were. And I don't accept any other answers. Those are the right answers.
We're going to ask for comments and what you thought about the show later on, but we don't mean about their star signs. Like, you cannot comment on that.
The discussion is over.
No, I disagree. I do, in fact, want you all to at Lainey with your opinions about their star signs. You know, I need some cheap thrills in my life. Please pick a Twitter fight with Lainey about the star signs of the Motherland trio.
I feel like I already know that we're all going to be watching season 2.
Yeah. Well, I have to. I have to know if Tali becomes young again. That's the only thing that's in my mind. I don't care about Rael's mom who's not dead. I don't care about whatever magic Raelle and Abigail was doing.
Yeah, I also, that's, that for me is the one thing. If we watch like episode one and they're like, no, Tally's not young again, she dead, I'm like, okay, then you're dead to me, show.
I was gonna ask if you have any other like predictions or wish list items, but apparently it's just Tally young again, and that's it.
Number one, end of list.
Something that I didn't mention in the plot synopsis that Lainey just brought up is the fact that the actual end is the reveal that Raelle's mom is not actually dead and that she is the reason that the Spree were trying so hard to get her. And there is something about this that I really liked. It wasn't super shocking. There were like little hints. It was one of the few things though that I don't think was incredibly heavy-handed. There were hints that this was coming, but they were subtle enough that I didn't feel beaten over the head with it. It also was like, they were setting Raelle up as sort of a chosen one. They kept talking about how powerful she is. And we see that she's incredibly powerful. She was able to heal that girl, even though she's been in basic for a hot minute. And, you know, none of the like trained healers could heal her. And she did that. She did a thing at some point in basic where she like knocked out all of her classmates because she got angry by accident. So like there's stuff there that suggests that she's super powerful, and the implication of them like trying so hard to recruit her was that they're like, that she was a sort of chosen one. Like, I don't know, a little bit of it is of course that given her background that she might have been easy pickings, but like the show presents and dismisses that idea pretty quickly, that while Raelle suspects that that's why she was chosen and she beats herself up about that, that like, no, they didn't go after her for that reason. And it seemed like maybe they were going after her because she was a sort of chosen one in some type of way. And the fact that in the end, it wasn't that at all, and it was just like that it was her mom trying to get her daughter. I don't know. There is something about that. In general, I would say that the show was like not that deep, like at any point. But the fact that they were subverting that trope in that way, I enjoyed that. I don't really care about where that plot goes beyond that point, but I enjoyed that subversion of the chosen one trope that they were kind of setting up with her.
Not to talk about Tally being old again, but I felt similarly about when Tally turned old. I felt like I should have seen it coming because, again, the show wasn't too, like, wasn't being very subtle about, like, the whole Biddies thing. We get focus on them, but I thought it was because we see somebody turn into a Biddy like halfway through the season. And it's not a character we're familiar with, but it just, they show us the reveal. I thought was like, this is how she stays young. And you're like, damn, okay.
And I was like, that would suck.
Yeah. Just sacrifice my entire youth and life to you. So it felt like adding another piece to the lore. So when we got to the point where a Biddy gets hurt at the very end and Tally is moving forward, it felt like clicking into place of why they focus so hard on the Biddies. And then like also like, oh my God, to actually give one of the three to becoming a Biddy, like that felt like a pretty significant thing. So while I don't want her to stay old and I would like her to be young in episode one, it would be interesting if they carried it on for a while, because that feels very like an unsafe storytelling sort of thing to do, is to keep one of your young main characters old for a while.
Well, and especially because they make such a thing with Tally about her being the last of her line, like because that is central to her, like, background or whatever, creating a situation where she gonna die soon. has an extra weight,
especially because she hated Alder by the end of like episode 9 and 10. Like, she went into it being like, fuck this girl or fuck this woman, and then to like, I hate it, but I love it so much in a storytelling sense because
she's so good and pure that she's still like, I will save your, I fucking hate you, but I am still going to save your life because I'm better than you.
Like, one of the last moments between her and like Raelle and Abigail, and she's like, I didn't know what else to do. I was like, baby, I love you.
Baby, precious. You did good, Tom. You did good.
And on that note, that brings us to the end of another episode. Thank you so much to Lainey for joining us this week, and thank you all for listening. If you're enjoying this podcast, consider sharing it with your friends or rating or reviewing it wherever you are listening to this podcast. We'd love to hear all of your thoughts on Motherland, Fort Salem. There will be a post dedicated to this episode up on snarksquad.com. You can sign up to join our community on Patreon at patreon.com/snarksquad, and you can also find us on Twitter at @snark_squad. You can find me at My Name Is Vaniness.
I am at Sweeney Says.
And I'm at Read Along Lainey.
At her with all of your star sign.
Tag me too, so I can watch you play.
This podcast is produced by the Snark Squad. The theme music that is playing us out right now is by Stefan Chick.